People are like, oh, adrenal fatigue doesn't exist. Hypothalamic pituitary axis dysfunction. That's actually what it is. It's really the naming of it that got people confused. What's the simplest solution that gets the best results? Focusing on your nutrition, making sure that you are getting really good nutrients from your food. There's always more than one way to heal. A lot of the things that we do to help normalize cortisol levels are also going to help normalize with that whole stress response. So I just really try to meet people where they're at.
Welcome to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast, where we meet the world's top experts to explore the secrets of health, mindset, longevity, and so much more. Are you ready to take charge of your existence and biohack your life? This show is for you. Please keep in mind, we're not dispensing medical advice and are not responsible for any outcomes you may experience from implementing the tactics lying herein. Are you ready? Let's do this. Welcome back to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Oh my goodness, friends, I am so honored about today's episode. I have been following Dr. Isabella Wentz for so long, so it was a true pleasure to connect with her, and she was just such a beautiful, genuine human being, and we dive deep into so many things that I get so many questions about. Things like cortisol patterns and fasting, how to test your cortisol, saliva versus urine, whether or not you should embrace caffeine. A supplement I've been getting a lot of questions about, especially ever since my old co-host Cynthia Thurlow released her version, which is my inositol, the concept of whether or not adrenal fatigue actually exists, and then some things I feel really passionate about, like the role of boundaries in your life. And Dr. Wentz is so kind. She is actually giving my audience 10% off site-wide for all of her incredible supplements at Rootcology. Just use the coupon code Melanie Avalon for 10% off at rootcology.com. That's rootcology.com. Again, 10% off with the coupon code Melanie Avalon at rootcology.com. Hey friends, did you know that one of our largest sources of toxic exposure each and every day is through our skincare and makeup? It is so frightening the effects these compounds can have on our health. So we put these products on to help us look better, and yet they actually can be aging us, contributing to health issues, fertility issues, thyroid issues, mood issues, and ready for something potentially even more shocking? A lot of these endocrine disruptors are actually obesogens, meaning they cause your body to gain weight and make it harder to lose weight. That's right, your skincare and makeup may be hindering your weight loss goals. Europe has banned thousands of these compounds, and the US has banned around a dozen. There's even a loophole from the 1960s that allows companies to put whatever they want in their products, and they don't even have to tell you. That's why I am overwhelmingly careful about the skincare and makeup that I use. But here's the thing, it can be hard to find skincare and makeup that is non-toxic and actually works. And then on top of that, that actually has all the products you need. I have found two companies, I am obsessed with their standards and use them every single day of my life and cannot recommend them enough. That's Counter, formerly known as Beauty Counter, and Crunchy. Both of these companies have incredible standards when it comes to what they put in their products. You can truly feel good about using them and they actually work. For Counter products, go to melanieavalon.com/counter. And for Crunchy products, go to crunchy.com. That's crunchy.com/melanieavalon. New Crunchy customers can use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 to get 10% off. You'll also receive something special from me after your first order. I also highly recommend joining both of their loyalty programs. It's completely free to join, and with every purchase, you'll earn credit as well as other fun goodies. For all the latest updates, new products, specials, deals, and fun things for me, because yes, I love giving things away, get on my email list. That's at melanieavalon.com/cleanbeauty. You can also get text updates when you text skincare to 877-861-8318. That's skincare to 877-861-8318. So again, to shop with me and get a free gift from me after your first order, go to melanieavalon.com/counter and also crunchy.com/melanieavalon. And new customers, use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 at Crunchy to get 10% off site-wide. And again, definitely join their free loyalty programs to earn credit on every order. Hey friends, exciting news. My Avalon X Spirulina is back in stock and now at a reduced price. Plus you get free shipping and my coupon code works on top of that sale price. Spirulina is honestly one of the most nutrient dense things that you can put in your body in a whole foods, easy to eat form. It's a blue-green algae, which is a complete vegan protein packed with an incredible array of nutrients. We are talking 100% of your daily hard-to-get vitamin K, 625% of vitamin B12, over 1,000% of vitamin A, 86% of chromium, 27% of vitamin B2, plus so much more, including iron, GLA, the powerful antioxidant superoxide dismutase, and even glutathione. In fact, spirulina is so uniquely nutritious that it was actually studied by NASA to support the astronauts. I searched high and low to find the very best spirulina out there. Ours comes from a wonderful, sustainable, clean, environmentally friendly production facility in Hawaii. Not Thailand, Hawaii. And then on top of that, we did our own third-party testing for over 70 pesticides, heavy metals, toxins, all the things. This is the cleanest spirulina out there. And with spirulina, you can simplify your supplement routine and support your nutrition in one easy step. The tablets are super versatile. You can swallow them whole, blend them into smoothies, crush them up, or honestly, just eat them like I do. And again, we were out of stock, but now Avalon X Spirulina is finally back in stock at a reduced price, and my coupon code MelanieAvalon works on top of that too. Plus, you get free shipping. Just go to avalonx.us/spirulina and use the coupon code MelanieAvalon to get 10% off our new reduced price plus free shipping. That's avalonx.us/spirulina with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. All right, so time for the episode. And as a brief reminder, you can get 10% off site-wide at Dr. Isabella Wentz's site, rootcology.com, with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. And now, without further ado, please enjoy this fabulous conversation with Dr. Isabella Wentz. Hi, friends. Welcome back to the show. I am so incredibly excited about the conversation that I'm about to have. And you know, it's with a guest that I really, really love because I'm recording a little bit of video for the introduction because you guys know I'm not a huge fan of video. But I have been following this woman's work for years, especially because I have hypothyroidism, not Hashimoto's, but just when you have hypothyroidism, you kind of go in all the rabbit holes of all the tangents and do all the research. And a legend in that sphere is Isabella Wentz, who I am here with today. She is a pharmacist and a New York Times bestseller. And I originally got into her work for her original books, which include Hashimoto's Thyroiditis and Hashimoto's Protocol. And she has a new book out, which is fantastic. When I heard about it and saw the subject, I was just so, so excited because I think it's something that people, well, a lot of people struggle with, for one. And two, there is so much controversy surrounding this topic, as in people think maybe it doesn't even exist. So does it exist? I don't know. We're going to talk about that in today's episode. Her new book is called Adrenal Transformation Protocol, and it deals with the topic of, quote, adrenal fatigue. So I have so many notes, so many questions. The book was absolutely fantastic and fabulous. Isabella, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Melanie. It's an honor to be here with you.
So, and I am going to turn off my video in a little bit, but before I do, could you just tell listeners a little bit about your personal story and what led you to writing this book specifically today?
So I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's in my 20s. When I was probably 25 years old, I kept going to doctors and wondering why I was having irritable bowel syndrome, brain fog, fatigue, carpal tunnel in both arms, tons of allergies, and really kind of the thing that got to me was that I started losing hair, right? And so I had been going to doctors pretty much every year since I was 18 when I started to have chronic fatigue. And I was like, well, what's going on with me? I was going through undergrad. I went through pharmacy school, didn't really get a lot of answers. And finally, I pushed for testing and I learned that I had Hashimoto's thyroiditis in my 20s. And at that point, I was like, okay, So what can I do about it, right? I had already graduated from pharmacy school and was a practicing pharmacist at the time. And of course, I was excited to get on medications because, you know, what pharmacist isn't, right? But the medications, they helped me like a little bit. I was like, oh, these thyroid medications I learned about in pharmacy school, like that this is the answer when you have a thyroid condition. You take a thyroid medication. And I was like, wait a minute, but I'm still losing my hair. I'm still having like brain fog and fatigue. I need a little bit less sleep. I'm going from like 12 hours of sleep to 11 hours of sleep, but I'm still having acid reflux and carpal tunnel and just all of these symptoms. And I was like, is there anything I can do beyond taking medications or in addition to or whatnot? And then I started to really research some of the root causes of Hashimoto's and autoimmune disease and some of the symptoms that I was dealing with. And that's how I became a Hashimoto's expert / human guinea pig, was just really trying to get myself to feel halfway human in my 20s. And I fortunately was able to get myself into remission after a few years. And then I released my first book, Hashimoto's, The Root Cause, 10 years ago. And this really documented my journey from having full-blown Hashimoto's with a ton of symptoms to getting myself into remission and feeling amazing. I had energy again. My hair came back, and I was like, wow, people need to know this. I'm a pharmacist, but here I am talking about other things that you could do beyond medications. At the same time, I thought I was the right person to get that message out because, you know, I'm like, I was trained in medications and people need to know beyond meds. Part of what I did to heal myself was changing my diet around, and going gluten-free and dairy-free was such a big breakthrough for me for acid reflux and IBS and carpal tunnel. But then I still struggled with like the brain fog and the fatigue and unrefreshing sleep and anxiety and the panic attacks. And then I was like, okay, asking questions, going to different practitioners. And I kept hearing the term adrenal fatigue. And being like a skeptical pharmacist, I'm looking it up and I go online and it says adrenal fatigue doesn't exist, right? It's like a made up disorder. You don't have adrenal fatigue. So I was like, okay, I don't have this. Obviously, like I'm not going to be fooled. Like whatever these people are saying, and then just tried other things. You know, I'm like putting coconut oil on my thyroid gland. Maybe that'll help, right? It didn't. Spoiler alert. And finally, I got into, okay, somebody mentioned adrenal fatigue again. I'm just going to look into it. I'm going to try the things. I've kind of tried everything else at that point. And sure enough, I had done the tests and I had adrenal dysfunction and low levels of cortisol production throughout the day. And holy cow, the treatments that I used for this actually worked. And I was like, oh, so this thing that people said didn't exist, actually, you can test for it. And I had the test results. And then I did what the test results said to do. And I actually got better. You know, I haven't had a panic attack in over 10 years. I don't have anxiety anymore. It turns out that I'm a pretty laid back person, not a really high strung person. I have refreshing sleep. I have energy even when I wake up in the morning, which was, you know, such a rare thing for me to be waking up with energy. And then some of this shifted over the last decade. I've been talking about it. I've been helping people with it. And I had my set of protocols that really focused on either using hormones or like really intensive lifestyle changes, like sleep for 10 to 12 hours a night for 30 days. And then I found myself 5 years ago in another bout of adrenal quote unquote fatigue, where I was a new mom and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't take hormones and I can't sleep for 12 hours a night because I have this little person that I have to care for every 2 to 3 hours all night. And so I came across a new way to rebalance this stress response that is known as adrenal fatigue and to actually get people to thrive in a few weeks.
That is so incredible. And I'm like making a list in my head. So many things I want to touch on. And it really, I mean, it really shows you're glowing, your hair looks amazing. And you just, so clearly everything that you're doing is working. Okay. Wow. So many questions for you. So I actually have a question first, just about your career. Something that stuck with me, I don't know, I think it was my mom who told me this like forever ago, but it was one of those little things she like said in passing when I was probably younger. And it just really stuck with me. And it was about how when it comes to like knowing things about conventional medicine, pharmacists are the ones that know. Not to say the conventional doctors don't know things. I think a lot of us don't really appreciate how much pharmacists probably know about medications. And I'm just really interested in like the schooling that goes into that and your experience as a pharmacist. Like, how do you think it informed your perspective of medicine and health, especially when it comes to comparing it or putting it up against the functional medical world?
So it's such a great question. Most pharmacists go through a four-year program for undergraduate studies. So this would be something like a similar to a pre-med program, usually biology, chemistry, physics, all those fun things. And then there's a four-year graduate program, a doctorate degree in pharmacy, which is what I went through. And it's a lot of medications, right? It's a lot of chemistry. It's a lot of pharmacology, a lot of, you know, here's what a disease might look like, and here are the treatment options. And I will say I was taught about other treatment options, but it was like very much light, like a few percent of the conversation would be spent on like lifestyle, right? My professor sure did try, but a lot of it was focused on like, these are the medications that you would utilize. So as you can imagine, for 4 years, just studying medications and then optimized medication use, there are advanced certifications for that as well. So I'm trained in medication therapy management. So this is how to choose the right kind of medication for the right person. And there are a lot of nuances that go into medications and precision medicine. It's like so many different options for one condition. And how do you choose the best option for that individual based on the other medications that they're taking, their risk factors? There's also pharmacogenomics that looks at their genetic profile to figure out what might be the optimal medication for that person. So yeah, it's interesting because a lot of the pharmacists that work in the community, their primary job, and I think what most people know pharmacists as, is you know, you bring in your prescription and they fill it in the back of the pharmacy and they bring you your medications. But the schooling that goes into it really prepares you to be like on the front lines of, hey, this is a person that's got all these chronic health conditions and everything is going on with this person's life and they have a ton of medications that they're taking. How do you create the most safe and effective plan for them? And so that was really my training. And after pharmacy school, I tried working in the community and I enjoyed it. Part of me enjoyed it, but at the other part, I was like, wait, I want to use some of this other knowledge that I learned. And so I started working more in a consulting role for people with really complicated health conditions. So typically the individuals I would help advise usually had numerous disabilities, rare genetic disorders, sometimes mental health issues, sometimes a few chronic health conditions. And I would be looking into like a whole body assessment and looking at all of their health conditions and medications and how to really create a plan for them. Oftentimes when there wasn't a clear defined guideline. And so I guess my training is a little bit unique because for the clients that I worked with rare disorders, I had to learn so much. I had to always be on top of the latest research. Sometimes it was forums of parents who had children with these disorders to try to find out what was actually working for these individuals who maybe didn't have a lot of answers from a conventional medical standpoint. And this is what I ended up using for my own health to try to figure out how to get myself better.
I'm so fascinated by it. I was thinking more about why I'm so fascinated by it because I don't think any of the authors or people that I've interviewed have that background specifically. And I think what's so interesting about it is rather than, you know, conventional doctors where the focus is usually like one specialty, I'm assuming with the pharmacology, it requires you to have knowledge, like you just said, over such a broad spectrum of, I mean, the entire health spectrum, essentially. So that's really fascinating to me. Wait, so did you put coconut oil on your thyroid, like on your skin?
Yes, my skin looked beautiful, but it didn't heal my thyroid.
Wow, that's amazing. I also, by the way, with my thyroid stuff that I went through, the hair loss was happening and the panic that comes with that is very, or at least for me, was very intense. Like I was like, I have to fix this. Like I have to do all the things. So I definitely empathize there. Okay. So coming back though to the topic of today, which is the quote, adrenal fatigue. So I mentioned it, you mentioned it. There's this concept that it doesn't exist. So why? What is going on there? Does it exist? And what is Addison's, for example?
That's such a great question. So kind of going back to the history of it all, I've been trying to sort of the myths, and there's a lot going on in, I guess, natural medicine that may not be 100% accurate or even helpful, like, you know, coconut oil over your thyroid gland. You know, some things just work and some things don't work. And so I always try to figure out how it started and where the theory came from and sort of the history of it. And so I think it's helpful to talk about the history of adrenal fatigue. About 25 years ago, a naturopathic doctor named James Wilson wrote a book by that title because he noticed this pattern in some of his patients where they really weren't getting a diagnosis or much help from their conventionally trained doctors, where it was really like this person is kind of tired. They have brain fog. They have morning fatigue. They have anxiety. They might have a mild version of depression. They have trouble falling asleep. They're wired but tired. They, when they get up too quickly, they feel lightheaded. They have salt cravings and light sensitivity. And he termed this kind of syndrome or this presentation as adrenal fatigue. His initial theory was that this was related to Addison's disease. Now, Addison's disease is a condition where our adrenal glands, which produce our cortisol, which is our main stress hormone, among other things, cannot physically, they're unable to produce adequate amounts of cortisol to get us through the day. And Addison's disease, it's usually an autoimmune condition where the immune system starts to attack the adrenal glands. This will manifest like that low cortisol pattern will be seen when 90% of the adrenal glands have been destroyed. And then the adrenal glands physically, they cannot produce any cortisol. And a person will have symptoms similar to those of adrenal fatigue, but like far more intense, where they might be bedridden. They cannot walk, right? And this is usually a situation where a person might go to intensive care. They might be hospitalized for this situation. And this generally requires, you know, hormonal support once they get this diagnosis. And so Dr. Wilson, his theory was that could adrenal fatigue kind of be the early stages of Addison's, maybe only 60% of your adrenal glands are destroyed, something to that effect. So he thought people with adrenal fatigue could not produce their own cortisol. Now, more research has been done since that time, and I can't say that maybe there isn't or there aren't some people who maybe have a mild version of Addison's or the early stages of Addison's that present that way, but we now understand that adrenal fatigue, quote unquote, and I would say the more accurate term that I tend to use is adrenal dysfunction. This is essentially the way that the body responds to stress. So when we've been stressed out for a long time, our body will shift into this state known as adrenal dysfunction. The scientific term is hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis dysfunction. This happens over time because initially when we're stressed, the body gets the message to produce more cortisol. As that goes on for too long and we still keep having stress, exposure, and perception of stress, the body will eventually compensate. You know, some of the cortisol receptors can become saturated, desensitized. And essentially what can happen with time is that the body still senses stress. And so our brain will send a message to the adrenal glands to produce stress hormones, but then the adrenal glands don't respond properly. And there seems to be this communication breakdown along the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis where it's like, yes, I'm stressed and yes, I need to make cortisol, but my adrenal glands are not doing it. And usually it's because you've been in a chronic stress state. So, you know, people are like, oh, adrenal fatigue doesn't exist. And I'm like, okay, why don't you do a PubMed search for hypothalamic pituitary axis dysfunction, because that's actually what it is. So that's the scientific term for it. And I believe the kind of, I guess, skepticism around it comes from the term adrenal fatigue, sounding a lot like adrenal insufficiency, which is another name for Addison's. People would go to their doctors after, you know, reading something online or maybe working with their naturopaths, and they'd go to an endocrinologist and say, can you test my adrenals? And the endocrinologist would do the tests for Addison's, and they would say, you do not have Addison's disease, right? So this is, I feel like I've been talking about it a lot, and I'm like, this is kind of like a nomenclature thing where it's really the naming of it that got people confused and the initial theory about what the mechanism of action was behind this.
So basically, when people think adrenal fatigue, they think the adrenals literally cannot produce cortisol, but really they're just not. They're just choosing not to, or they're not hearing. Are they not hearing the message, or are they hearing the message and choosing not to?
I think it could be one or both of a bit of both of these. I think the key is that they're physically going to be healthy, but they're not producing cortisol at the right times and in the right amounts. Some of the theories behind that would be the receptor desensitization, so that cortisol receptors maybe pick up the messages and they don't send it forward. But it is something that is very, very common, to the point where a lot of the symptoms are so common that they get brushed off. But you can actually test for adrenal dysfunction through some integrative tests as well.
So when they're testing for adrenal dysfunction, what do they test specifically?
Some of the tests that I find the most helpful are going to be things like the adrenal saliva test. And this is cortisol. You can test your cortisol secretion throughout the day. Generally, we want to have a healthy cortisol response first thing in the morning, and then you should have a kind of gradual decline of cortisol production throughout the day, so that in the evenings you can rest and sleep. And the cortisol levels can be tested throughout the saliva. And then there's also a Dutch profile test that looks at your cortisol levels and your cortisol metabolites in your urine. So this is another test that we can do. These tests, you know, they're not going to be like approved by your insurance, and the endocrinologist may not be utilizing them. So generally, if you're going to an integrative practitioner or a functional medicine practitioner, this is a person that may be able to order those tests for you, or you can self-order them online.
You spoke in the book about, you know, hurdles you experienced with your program with testing and changes in labs and things like that. In general, though, do you find both the saliva and the urine, are they accurate portrayals of the whole body status of cortisol, or do you think one is more accurate than the other?
So yeah, I've had a lot of issues with testing in the last decade. So normally I try to educate people about doing, you know, do you have adrenal dysfunction? This might be a part of what's going on with your body if you have these symptoms. And then they'd go to their endocrinologist and get tested for Addison's. And the doc would be like, you don't have this. So then it would be like, okay, well, you actually have to go to an integrative practitioner. And then they would do the tests. Sometimes they wouldn't do the tests. Sometimes the tests would just be sitting at their houses for a few months before they did them. But the tests that I have found to be accurate are going to be both the cortisol saliva test, such as the ZRT lab. It does matter which lab company does it. I have worked with a whole host of different labs. I used to use a company called BioHealth in the past, where I could look at a person's symptoms and I could draw their cortisol curve, and the test results I would get would match perfectly. And then after some time, they redefined their reference ranges. And so I would be talking to people who were tired all day, and then I'd get their results back. And then it would, because the reference ranges were adjusted, and the person would come back with quote unquote normal cortisol secretion throughout the day. And so I ended up having to go back and use the old reference ranges. And that's what a lot of integrative practitioners were doing. This company has since closed. But typically I found ZRT lab can be, you know, the most accurate for that as far as saliva testing. Some of the things that can be tricky is if people have a lot of fat in their bodies, that can actually secrete cortisol. So that can throw off those results. And then, of course, if people drink caffeine, that can throw off the results as well. If people have issues with producing enough saliva, so some people with Sjogren's or other conditions of dry mouth might have an issue with that. And I really love the Dutch test because it looks at urinary metabolites. So that gives us a little bit more information. So it looks at how the body processes the cortisol as well. And it has a few additional markers. The tricky thing about the Dutch test, and I will say this, so appreciate what they do, but the tests are so challenging to understand and read that it took me like 3 to 5 years to like master that test, where the cortisol saliva test, I can just give it to a person and most people without any kind of medical training or background can understand how to read that test. Whereas the Dutch test can be, it's a little bit nuanced to understand the results.
And something I will mention for listeners, and I'm sure we'll touch on this, but you wrote your book and you have your program, which does not even require testing. You know, people can read it and self-diagnose based on symptoms and do the protocol without necessarily testing. So that's making everything so accessible. So thank you for that. Two things you mentioned. One, you've been mentioning the cortisol receptors in the body, as well as what you were just saying about the fat cells releasing cortisol. So where all in the body are receptors for cortisol? And then the second question is, does it matter where the cortisol is coming from as far as how we feel from it? So like cortisol being produced by the adrenals versus cortisol from fat cells.
Such a great question. One of the places where we have a high concentration of cortisol receptors is in our belly. So people who tend to have more belly fat, this can be a cortisol response. And I do think it matters because, you know, is it coming from a person having too much weight or is it coming from stress, right? And both things are stress per se, but the approach might be a little bit different.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, still on the cortisol front. How does it compare to epinephrine and norepinephrine? Because I think for all of those, we think like stress hormones. What's the difference between them?
So our epinephrine and norepinephrine, these are also secreted during a stress response. And cortisol is typically something that is secreted in a circadian fashion when we're healthy. People typically hear about cortisol being high, this might be a problem, right? That's kind of the mainstream medical approach. It's like your cortisol is too high, you're going to be having trouble. But cortisol, we really do need it for optimal function. We can have issues with it being too high or too low. And so typically we do want more cortisol secreted in the morning and that to follow a circadian fashion where the cortisol levels decline throughout the day. Whereas there are things like adrenaline dominance and other kinds of things that may occur when somebody has a dysregulated stress response. For the common patterns that I've really focused on are going to be those cortisol responses when a person isn't producing enough cortisol so that they're not properly managing the inflammation in the body. They're not producing enough energy throughout the day and they're having perhaps too much cortisol in the evenings when they're not sleeping at night. So there's a lot of different hormones that are produced by the adrenal glands. There are a lot of hormones that are produced in response to stress. I feel like cortisol is probably the most relevant one for a lot of us. And this is a great place for people to really start and dial in. A lot of the things that we do to help normalize cortisol levels are also going to help normalize with that whole stress response. So even people with some of the adrenaline dominance symptoms, balancing cortisol. But in my book, it's all going to help.
So you just mentioned the role of inflammation. That's something else I've always been a little bit confused about because I've read cortisol is both, I've read it's anti-inflammatory and that it's inflammatory. So when you say managing inflammation, what is the role of cortisol in inflammation?
That's such a great question because when we typically hear about cortisol, when we have too much of it, it can be inflammatory. It can cause breakdown of tissues in our body, right? And that can be inflammatory. And when we don't have enough of it, it can be a problem where our inflammation goes unchecked. So cortisol is naturally has anti-inflammatory benefits. And it is something that our body releases when it senses stress, when it senses inflammation. So what I've seen in my experience is people that have low levels of cortisol, this may be a pattern that occurs before they start getting some sort of a chronic inflammatory condition, such as thyroiditis or colitis, where their inflammation goes unchecked. And the body kind of ends up in this breaking itself down mode and doesn't spend enough time in like managing inflammation and repairing.
Hey friends, I'm about to tell you how to get 10% off the ideal coffee when it comes to supporting your health. So if you guys know me, you know I am obsessed with optimizing basically everything I consume, and that especially relates to coffee. Did you know that coffee is one of the most powerful sources of antioxidants in the modern diet? And yet, not all coffee is created equal. Between sourcing, farming practices, roasting, and contaminants, there can be a huge difference in the health impact of the coffee that you drink. That is exactly why I created Glow Coffee. Glow Coffee is a premium, specialty-grade Arabica coffee sourced from sustainable women-led farms in Colombia. It's organically grown, and we third-party test it meticulously, like every single lot, for purity. And what makes Glow especially exciting from a biohacking perspective is that we specifically made it to be rich in chlorogenic acid, or CGA. That's one of coffee's primary, most potent antioxidant compounds that has been studied for its role in metabolic health, inflammation, oxidative stress, and so much more. The elevation levels of the beans, how they're grown, and how they're roasted all affect CGA levels. So we searched high and low to find the perfect beans naturally high in CGA and tested them to confirm that, and then we roast those beans to preserve the CGA content. And then test after that as well. Coffee is already one of the potentially biggest contributors of antioxidants in the human diet, so I designed Glow Coffee to maximize those benefits while keeping it incredibly clean and high quality. And this coffee is so clean. It's grown organically, of course, but then we go even farther than that. We third-party test the beans for almost 100 toxic compounds, including pesticides, heavy metals, and mold. Oh, and perhaps the best part is it is absolutely delicious. We're talking smooth, low bitterness. It's honestly the exact coffee I personally want to drink every single day of my life. It's so bright, smooth, and delicious that it's also perfect black for fasting. No added sweeteners or cream needed. You can also splash it on your face for an antioxidant-rich toner. I do that every single day. After the sauna, after the shower, all the things. I created Glow Coffee because it's really about upgrading one of our most common daily habits into something that truly supports your health and performance. You can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at glowcoffeeco.com. That's 10% off Glow Coffee with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at glowcoffeeco.com. Are you ready to glow inside and out? Fuel your day, illuminate your way. That's glowcoffeeco.com. I've been so confused about that for so long because I knew that cortisol is, you know, like you said, has anti-inflammatory properties, but then we so associate it with, you know, chronic inflammation and inflammation. So that is interesting. Okay, so this curve, you talk in your book about what a normal, you know, and you mentioned it just now, what a normal cortisol curve, circadian curve looks like for a given person, and then how there's these three stages where things start going awry. One thing I'm really interested about with that curve, do you have thoughts on circadian chronotypes? And so people who are, you know, morning people versus evening people and them having a delayed cortisol spike. I was going down the rabbit hole of trying to find all the studies I could find on this. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that? And does that come into play with if somebody is more susceptible to adrenal dysfunction?
So I've gone through some of those rabbit holes as well. So I used to think that I was that person where I would have, you know, kind of trouble waking up in the morning, right? And then you might have this night owl person that has trouble falling asleep at night. These individuals are also tend to be more sensitive to like light and dark, right? So they're going to be the ones that are going to be more likely to have seasonal affective depression. And they're going to be potentially the people that have a harder time around the full moon. And they might have a harder time sleeping around the full moon. And so I've kind of gone through this deep dive on that. And one of the interesting studies that I came across is that a lot of this can be reset by getting really in alignment with circadian rhythm. So how do we do that? We can go camping for 2 weeks in nature, right? And then we have this natural exposure to light and dark. Part of why I think we have a lot of these chronotypes is because of the wonders of modern technology, where we have these beautiful lights in our homes and we have wonderful television shows and we have phones that let us connect with the entire world and computers, right? And so we kind of lose the signal of when is it daytime and when is it nighttime, because the lights inside of our house are not as bright as outside lights, right? But they still give us more light than complete darkness could. And so if we spend enough time indoors and we don't get early morning sunshine, and if we have the lights on after dark, some people tend to be more sensitive than others, then we can get really disconnected from that circadian rhythm and that circadian cortisol production. And so I can't say I've worked with every single person who identifies as a night owl, and I can't say that I've worked with every single person that's a late riser, but I have say that I've worked with enough people where we focus on rebalancing their circadian rhythm, where they're like, oh no, I now have energy in the morning and I could sleep at night now. I thought I was a night owl. So I'm never going to speak in absolutes, but I kind of think maybe it's a myth from what I've seen and what we can do with just proper light exposure.
So for you, you said normally you felt like you're more of a night person. Did you ever like actually feel like a morning person when you healed your adrenals?
I never felt like a morning person until I healed my adrenals. So I used to be up until like 2 to 3, 4 a.m. trying to get, you know, things done. I would wake up with brain fog, kind of confused. I was like, where am I? Who am I? Why am I here? Like, why is it so bright? And all of that. And then I started really working with circadian rhythm work and realigning with that. And it's like morning time, I wake up with energy, and nighttime, I get tired. In our house, we do like red lights after sunset, and we're very intense like that. I don't know, you know, I've worked with over 3,500 people that have gone through my adrenal transformation protocol. And a big part of what we do is we really focus on realigning with the circadian rhythm. And you know, more than around 89% of people have less fatigue, and more around 80% of people sleep better at night and they're able to fall asleep and stay asleep. And, you know, I don't know. I feel like this is something that you can definitely rebalance when you just get enough light exposure and you get really refreshing, restful sleep at night, right? And really manage your stress too, because stress can make us all kinds of crazy.
Yeah, no. So I think, first of all, I'm like the same as you. So I do all the red lights and the blue light blocking glasses and all the things. I think where I've landed presently is that, because I just intuitively feel like a night person. But on top of that, though, I also used to really struggle with sleep and felt like I needed way more sleep. And then I didn't feel rested and I had insomnia. So now I've really like addressed all of that with everything I've been doing health-wise and light exposure and circadian rhythm and all the things. I still go to bed late and wake up late. I'm just actually like sleeping well, not having insomnia. So I feel like I'm like halfway in between.
What do you consider late?
Oh, goodness. like you mentioned, like 3 or 4 a.m.
I will say some people do find that they're more productive and they may prefer that lifestyle if they... Let's say there's a lot going on throughout the day, but just having that, I know a lot of creative people may feel that's when they can get a lot of things done and have that open time to create. But I think like the key is like you don't have to be that way. Like if you wanted to be a morning person, you could be.
I want to so bad. And I mean, it's like a whole thing. I'll like lament to my mom. I'm like, Mom, I want to be a morning person. But she's also identifies as like a night owl. And so she's like, Melanie, you were born this way. She's like, as long as you can, you know, do your lifestyle this way, just keep on going. So I'm always on the fence where I'm like, I want to be a morning person. I want to work on this, but maybe not. I don't know. It's a whole thing. So I'm very motivated hearing what you just said, that you've worked with so many patients and have seen, you know, this ability for people. So I'm inspired. Maybe I'll work on it some more. Okay. So, well, speaking of those stages, to define them for listeners, did you come up with the 3 stages in the book based on all of the work that you've done with your patients or people that you've worked with?
As far as the different patterns of adrenal dysfunction?
Yes, like the stage one and then the roller coaster stage and then the stage three.
I did not come up with that. I cannot take credit for that. This is just traditional functional medicine training. There's a lot of different lab companies, and some of them have, you know, tons of different stages of adrenal dysfunction that you can present with. The most common patterns I've seen are the ones that I talked about, where a person can either have too much cortisol produced throughout the day. And so this is a person that's like wakes up edgy and wired, and that goes on the entire day, and they have trouble falling asleep at night. And this is considered stage one. This may be a place where people start off. Then stage two is when a person might have normal levels of cortisol secreted throughout the day, but they're just not produced at the right times. So they might have low cortisol in the morning and then high cortisol in the evening. And this is that typical night owl pattern where that person has a hard time getting up in the morning. And I honestly, that was me for the longest time. And I don't ever remember being a morning person until I really started working with this adrenal transformation protocol. And this person has a hard time, you know, you're kind of like the night owl, you're the life of the party, everybody's ready to go home and you're ready to dance, right? And so this is a presentation that can occur. Another presentation might be where a person is on a blood sugar roller coaster, where they start off with low energy in the morning, and then they might have more energy as the day goes on, and then they drop. And then they have usually anxiety or mood swings, and then they have a harder time falling asleep at night, where they're kind of like on an emotional roller coaster. They're like, every day at 3 o'clock, I feel anxious, or every day at 3 o'clock, I feel tired, might be something that a person may say. And then probably the most common stage that I've seen in people is going to be low cortisol production throughout the day, where a person will have very low amounts of cortisol released in the morning, low amounts all throughout the day, and low amounts in the evenings. These are typically people that I see with hypothyroidism. About 62% of people fall in that category. And then people with chronic fatigue syndrome and people with fibromyalgia typically fall in that category as well, where they wake up tired. They're tired like at 1 o'clock, they're tired at 3 o'clock, they go to bed tired, and then they have unrefreshing sleep. And then some of these individuals may get that second wind in the evening, which is like, oh, great. So I'm tired all day. I'm tired all the time, but I also can't sleep.
Because you mentioned different types of people in those different stages. Do most people progress through those stages, or do some people just, you know, live in one stage?
That's an interesting question. So what I've been taught is that the stages are progressive. When my experience in testing people over the years, if you kind of do nothing about your lifestyle, the stages can kind of progress and get worse. For some people, it might take a year. Some people might take months. For other people, it might take 10 years, but they generally are thought to be progressive. If you really work on your health, you can get back into that healthy cortisol pattern. And just, you know, you can be working on your health and be very healthy, but just not knowing the type of things to reset that can, you know, basically mean that a person could get stuck in that progressive cortisol dysfunction pattern.
Awesome. Well, speaking of things to reset that, so your protocol is, honestly, it's breathtaking. What I love about it is I think when a lot of people think of health issues, oftentimes it's siloed in a specific approach, as in it's diet, like it's a diet solution, or it's a mindset solution, or it's a supplement solution. But you really, there's a breadth to your work, and it's whole body. So it encompasses the diet aspect of it, the lifestyle, the sleep, the mindset. I really love the parts of the book about the mindset issue and or aspect of it all. So many questions. One, coming up with your protocol, because you talk in the book about, and you mentioned it on this podcast as well, how historically your protocol dealt more with the supplement side, or you talk about how you originally worked more with testing and endogenous hormone. Were you using exogenous hormone supplementation in your protocol initially, or was that never a thing for you?
Yeah. So initially I was doing a lot of testing. And then when I started working with clients 10 plus years ago, I was utilizing pregnenolone and DHEA in like a circadian fashion to reset that cortisol production, where they'd get a little bit more of it in the morning. Pregnenolone is a precursor to cortisol and all of these other hormones, and to try to kind of reset their production. And this worked well for some people, not for everybody. So some people may utilize DHEA and it can overconvert to estrogen and can worsen estrogen dominance. Other women may overconvert it to something that causes chin hair and acne, never fun. And then some women, you know, like with a history of like family history of breast cancer or other kind of estrogen receptive cancers, they may not want to use hormones at all because it's like they're trying to keep that in balance and minimize those risk factors. And so that worked well for some people that I worked with. It can work. It worked well for me the first time I got out of adrenal fatigue. When I started to kind of educate people more online and through like programs, I got a bit nervous about people just dosing themselves on hormones, because you can really mess things up with like pregnenolone. The first practitioner that I went to gave me such a high dose of pregnenolone that I ended up like really fluid retained and had a lot of pain in my body. It was a pretty scary situation. And so you really have to be working with a practitioner that's knowledgeable, because there's so many factors that can impact the dosing, right? Not just weight. And so then I was like, well, how do I help people get out of this? What are some additional things they can do? And then I got onto like, oh, we can do like heavy duty lifestyle things, right? And I got into like, okay, you could sleep for 10 to 12 hours a night, and then you could quit caffeine and just really like focus on decommitting and de-stressing your life. And that worked well for some people that were able to do it, right? Of course, you know, I had the clients that were like, you know, I quit the coffee and like 60% of my joy is gone, but I still have all the symptoms, right? And so my protocols have just evolved with me over the last decade to try to figure out what are, I'm always thinking about like, what's the simplest solution that gets the best results? And what my pharmacist training is always like, what's the safest thing, right? Like, rather than like doing hormones, and then like, what's the most like achievable thing? My training is also in like compliance or patient adherence. So it's hard for me to tell people like, to heal your adrenals, you're going to have to quit coffee and sleep for 10 to 12 hours a night. It's like, some of my clients would be like, I'm out, not doing
it. Bye. Hey, friends. Did you know there is an ancient botanical that modern research shows performs on a level comparable to metformin when it comes to supporting healthy blood sugar levels? And not only that, this compound also supports the gut microbiome, healthy cholesterol levels, and even stimulates the AMPK pathway in the body to support cellular cleanup and longevity. You might have heard about AMPK. We talk about it a lot in the context of fasting, which also stimulates it. I am talking about berberine. I take berberine every single day of my life, and I see massive differences on my CGM, my continuous glucose monitor, when I use it. I take it to support my fast and before meals to reduce blood sugar levels. It is a powerhouse of a compound. And like I said, people are prescribed the pharmaceutical metformin to control their blood sugar levels when they could be taking this completely natural compound that has been used for thousands of years in both ancient traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine. I wanted to make the best berberine on the market, so that's why I created Avalon X Berberine 500. We did so much testing to find the most potent, pure, and clean form available. There's no problematic fillers, no common allergens, just pure, vegan, lab-tested berberine extracted from traditional sources. Friends, I am not kidding the difference I see on my blood sugar levels with this berberine. We're talking no post-meal spikes when I eat all that fruit, and lower fasting blood sugar levels. It also reduced my HbA1c and my cholesterol levels. You can get it at avalonx.us, and the coupon code IFPODCAST will get you 10% off. You can also get a one-time 20% off coupon code when you text AvalonX to 877-861-8318. That's AvalonX to 877-861-8318. And you can get a 15% off coupon code by signing up for email updates. For that, just go to avalonx.us/email list. Again, friends, this is one of the most powerful compounds you can add into your health and wellness routine. Healthy blood sugar control, even if you're not pre-diabetic or diabetic, is so important, and berberine helps support that. It is the ultimate compound for blood sugar control, cholesterol, your gut microbiome, and longevity. Get it at avalonx.us with the coupon code IFPODCAST. Oh, man. Okay. More questions about that. One just really quick, tiny question. Pregnenolone. Did I say that right?
Pregnenolone.
Okay. I knew I was saying that wrong. Okay. I as well, like way in the past, had a doctor suggest that I take it, but I read about how it could become different things. So I was on the fence. What all can it become?
It is known as our mother hormone, and it is produced from cholesterol, and it can convert into all kinds of hormones in our bodies, including that cortisol. It could convert to progesterone. It can convert to DHEA. It can convert to testosterone. So, and I have a chart. I wish maybe we can do a screenshot of it for your audience, but it's something that can convert to a whole bunch of different things, and it's a precursor. So when you take it externally, the theory was that your body didn't have enough pregnenolone to create some of these other hormones, that the conversion will just happen. So let's say you were low on progesterone, then you can just supplement with pregnenolone and that would correct the progesterone deficiency. Sometimes this happens, but sometimes kind of the dial switch may be still turned. So you might be low in progesterone, but rather than pregnenolone going down the progesterone pathway, it may get converted to like DHEA and then overconverted to estrogen. So it's not, you know, it'd be nice if you could just be like, okay, turn into this hormone, but that doesn't always happen. And so then some professionals may be like, okay, well, let's use progesterone or let's use this specific hormone, right?
Okay, that's really interesting. So it's sort of like if you had a kid that didn't have food and you gave them money, you got to just hope that they go buy food, but they might go buy like a toy or drugs.
Or candy, right?
Or candy. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Wow. That is so interesting. So when you did land on the current manifestation of your plan, is one thing most important, like diet, sleep, lifestyle, mindset, or is it really all of them? I mean, I know you mentioned that different things work for different people. How did you approach that as far as actually making the protocol and what's most important and the order people go in? And all of that.
So when I created this protocol initially for myself, I was a sleep deprived mom. And one of the fastest ways to get into adrenal dysfunction is through sleep deprivation. So if you are deprived of sleep and if you can get lots of sleep, that would be the fastest way to help yourself and get out. I also know, but you know, this wasn't realistic for me. So then I had to focus on other things. I have 14 different safety signals throughout the book that focus on kind of meeting you where you're at. So maybe this isn't necessarily accessible to you right now at the moment, but maybe you can choose some of the protocols and strategies. For a lot of people, what's very accessible is balancing their blood sugar. And this is actually where we start with for a majority of the people when I released the Adrenal Transformation Protocol as a program to my community in 2020. We focused on, okay, the first week we're going to get ramped up. We're going to kind of get educated and get ready and get to do the program. And then we would start with the diet piece. So making sure that you're eating for blood sugar balance, generally that means more protein and fats than the average person. And we're limiting some of the carbohydrates. So to really get your body into that blood sugar balance state, for many people, this alone just really can help with things like anxiety and waking up in the middle of the night. Kind of people that tend to wake up between 3 a.m. or so are going to be the ones that are going to have blood sugar issues at night. Then I focus on getting off of some of the inflammatory foods. People might have all kinds of different foods that they react to depending on what's going on with their microbiome. Generally speaking, if you're in that stress state, you're going to have low amounts of stomach acid. And so proteins that are more difficult to digest, such as gluten, dairy, and soy, are going to be the foods that I have people get off of just because they're the most common inflammatory foods for most people. And then I also have them get off of grains just because of the blood sugar issue. So this is a really solid place to start, is focusing on your nutrition and making sure that you are, you know, that you're really nourished and that you are getting really good nutrients from your food and you're getting your macronutrients, and we try to eat as nutritionally dense as possible as well to help send some of those safety signals. And this is a solid foundation. And then we kind of move into, you know, we're working on some of the mindset things and setting intentions throughout that process, just because, you know, it's like making a plan makes everything so much easier. And then we'll start adding in some of the supplements and then going a little bit deeper into some of the mindset and resilience work. Once our body's kind of happy and cool and not inflamed, it's much easier for some of the, you know, mindset and resilience work. So we're not going to be as triggered, for example, if we're well-fed and blood sugar balanced as we would be had we tried to just do some of the personal growth things that can be sometimes triggering if we're not properly balancing.
I loved the trigger section of your book. Before talking about that, quick question about the blood sugar concept. So I think this might be a little bit of a controversial question, but when it comes to the blood sugar balancing, and especially people with low blood sugar, so part of your protocol does include at certain points a little bit of fruit juice if people have low blood sugar. And I think people in the keto world might be like, what? You should not have that for low blood sugar. Like, you need to keto it out and address it that way. So how did you come to dealing with that issue specifically, you know, people with low blood sugar actually using like a carbohydrate to bring it back up versus going on a perpetual low carb diet?
You know, in my experience and working with people, like I've tried a lot of protocols with different people where initially I'd be like, oh my gosh, this person's feeling worse before they feel better. And that's always tricky, where I have a person, maybe they go keto and they're not properly digesting fats or protein, and then they feel so much worse, right? And maybe they go through a situation where they're trying to do more exercise, which is generally good for them, but then they feel worse after it. And so everything that I put into the program is focused on how do we make you feel better, right? Rather than like having you, you know, do fasting, and then we know that's really good for us, but the first few days we feel miserable. So like, again, I'm trying to think of what is like the most likely to result in people utilizing this strategy. Cause there's always more than one way to heal. There's just so many different pathways to healing. And I can't say, you know, one is wrong, and another one is the right path to go. But I will say for a lot of the people that I've worked with, having a little bit of orange juice and you add some protein powder, and you could add some coconut milk and electrolytes, blend it up in a smoothie. Having that first thing in the morning really helps you wake up. The electrolytes kind of help your cortisol levels increase naturally. It provides a beautiful feedback to the body, because people with morning fatigue and low morning cortisol also tend to have low blood pressure in the mornings, and they also tend to have low blood sugar in the mornings. And it's like they're very disoriented. And in my, you know, kind of in my experience as a pharmacist, it's like one of the fastest ways to get people out of that low blood sugar state was through like, you know, juice, give them some OJ, right? And this, I do it though, combining with the protein and fat, so you don't get that blood sugar crash afterwards. And this really can restore people's energy levels and kind of get their circadian rhythm back on track. And then they can tolerate more things like fasting, and then they can do better with the keto diet. Because sometimes, you know, you introduce the keto diet and people are like, I can't wake up, and I'm waking up all throughout the night, or I'm doing this. And I'm like, okay, what can we do to get a person to feel better? Because if I, you know, sometimes you only have one chance to help a person as a practitioner or whatnot before they're like, I don't trust this person anymore. I did what they said and I feel worse, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really love hearing that, especially because I think that was something I really did appreciate about the book, was what you just touched on, the nuance with the diet. Because I think so many people, you know, a lot of people are like all keto, or they're like all high carb, low fat. And it's nice to see that, you know, people are at different places and that there might actually be a sort of blend that can work for people. Do you work often with people with continuous glucose monitors?
I love continuous glucose monitors. I think they could provide so much feedback to our bodies. And the beautiful thing too is it might differ for a person. So I know I was talking to one of my girlfriends that was like, rice, I cannot eat rice. And another person's like, I do just fine with rice, but grapes are the thing that really sets me off. So it's really, really helpful. It's not, I don't require for people to use a CGM throughout the process. It is something that can be super, super helpful to figure out exactly how your body's responding to the foods that you're eating.
Do you wear a CGM often?
Yes, but it kind of gets me in trouble because being somebody that loves to experiment, I'll be like, what happens if I drink rosé today all day? It actually kind of, you know, for most people it would keep them on track. For me, it kind of keeps me off track, if that makes sense, because I just love experimenting. I'm like, what would happen if I did this?
That's so funny. Oh, well, got to drink all the wine. Got to see what happens.
In the name of science, right?
That's funny. No, I love that. Just to clarify about mentioning the fasting, do you think most people with adrenal dysfunction, since I'm also the host of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast, I have a lot of listeners that do fasting. Do some people have adrenal dysfunction and at the beginning be okay with fasting? Or do you feel like most people need to heal a little bit first? How do you feel about the spectrum of fasting as far as it being appropriate for people?
So for myself, like today, I can intermittently fast and I oftentimes do and I feel great with it. When I was not sleeping well at night or when I was going through a very stressful time, this was not a thing, right? So that actually made me feel worse. And I feel like people really need to listen to their bodies, where if you're skipping breakfast because you're trying to do intermittent fasting and then you're finding yourself gaining weight or waking up throughout the night, probably not the right dose of medicine for you at this time, right? If you're exercising and you feel worse after the exercise that you're doing and you feel like you have to recover for a few days, probably not the right dose for you. And really tuning into your body and seeing how you feel. Typically, the women that I start working with, they're the individuals that are skipping breakfast and they're carrying a bit extra weight and they're waking up in the middle of the night and they have trouble falling asleep. So a lot of times what I'll say is like, keep a banana by your bedside so that when you wake up, you can fall back asleep easier just going on that banana. And let's actually get more calories throughout the day into your system. We're going to do smoothies that are easy to digest and try to move your caloric intake. Initially, it might be like you wake up in the morning and you eat right away. And then, you know, you're going to have a snack before bedtime. And then over time, we can shrink that window once we really focus on balancing your blood sugar. Because there are things like, for example, if you have an inositol deficiency, which a lot of women with anxiety and thyroid issues seem to have some kind of a functional inositol deficiency, if you have a carnitine deficiency, that can prevent you from fasting properly and being able to get into ketosis really well. So I just really try to meet people where they're at, if that makes sense. And my goal is for people to like understand their bodies and understand the symptoms that their bodies are communicating to them. So I guess it's a long-winded answer. I think it can work really, really well for some people. It has worked really well for me. If you are feeling worse with it, you know, I wouldn't recommend doing it. I would actually recommend eating on a schedule to kind of set yourself up with getting more calories in during like the daylight hours. Even like some of the women, I'll say like eat every 2 to 3 hours within the first month as we're really focusing on, you know, I'm not just doing diet. I'm also doing supplements and doing some of the light exposure and some of the mindset work to really bring it all together so that you could be more metabolically flexible, right? As time goes on.
I love that so much. I think it's just, it's so unique for different people. And even like, cause I've gone down the rabbit hole looking at the studies on fasting and cortisol levels and things like that. And I mean, I've seen studies showing completely different things. Like I've seen them showing that it helps with normalizing stress-related hormones and endocrine hormones. And then I've seen like that it exacerbates issues. So I just feel like it's so, so unique. Oh, the banana thing. It reminds me of, because we were talking before the call about Dave Asprey, and I've been following his work for so long, like a decade. I remember when I first heard him talking about having honey in the middle of the night. And I was like, whoa, I was like, that seems like the antithesis of what he'd been talking about. But I think it, just as far as like the low carb approach to things, but I just think it speaks to how, I mean, it's like the theme of this episode, not getting wedded to these, you know, one mentalities and approaches, especially if they're not working for you. So that is fabulous to hear. Okay, going back to the triggers thing. So I love, well, first of all, listeners, so there's so much in this book as far as when it does come to the mindset aspect and how to make, you know, interventions in your life for, you know, positive mindsets and pleasurable activities and all of these things that you can do. I love the triggering section. I love the boundary section. I'm super curious. So with the triggering specifically, because you talked about in your personal story about how like one of the moments when you realized that you were, you know, falling back into the health issues and adrenal dysfunction was when like your mom called and you were, you know, annoyed that she called. So being annoyed or irritable or triggered by things, is that the cause or effect of adrenal issues?
I mean, it can be both, right? So it's always for me like a rule of thumb. It's like if you look around the room and you're like, this person's annoying, this person's annoying, this person's annoying, and my dog, if you breathe any louder, like I'm going to put you out back for the rest of the day, right? So it's like some people, yes, could be annoying and triggering and just like, you know, energy vampires to be around. But also if you have very little energy to interact with others, if you're very easily overwhelmed, even by like day-to-day activities, everything feels like a marathon to you. It's probably like not necessarily them, right? It's probably you. And we need to work on your resilience a bit because unless your mom is like a super awful person that calls you 35 times a day and yells at you, probably you shouldn't be annoyed when your mom calls to say hello, right?
Yeah, no, it's so funny. It's me. I'm the problem. Well, another question also related to that, the concept of boundaries. I love talking about boundaries. I think they're so important. I think one of the biggest for me personally, as far as my own health issues and energy and life, has been reframing boundaries as something, well, first of all, I think people see boundaries and they think that they're like a negative thing, like that's like being rude to people or shutting people out or being selfish. They think it's being selfish. What I've come to learn is that in order to have energy and thrive and protect yourself, like you have to have boundaries. And that's the way, and doing that for yourself is how you can, you know, most help other people. So what have you found when it comes to people having boundaries and people with adrenal issues?
You know, I found that a lack of boundaries can cause us to burn ourselves out, right? And so if we're the person that somebody's like, oh, you need to do, can you do this favor for me? Or can you do this with me? And you're trying to be nice and you don't have proper boundaries, you're going to keep pushing yourself past the point where you should be. And so really a big, big step for people is starting to say no to a lot of things and really creating the space for themselves to heal. Maybe for some people that does involve decommitting from the things that they're doing. One kind of thing that I've been very mindful of is sometimes, you know, our boundaries may not be compatible with another person's needs, right? So sometimes a person might need something from us and we have boundaries where we're just not able to do that. And sometimes that can feel very challenging and difficult, and it may impact relationships, right? Especially if you know, this person's used to you picking them up every single day and taking them shopping for a 6-hour shopping spree, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, I've got no money, I've got no time, I got to set some boundaries. You know, that can certainly change and shift dynamics.
That just made me think, have you found with the people that you've worked with, because there's all these different options of stress creation in the body. And, you know, we're talking about this thesis that we're overwhelmed with all these chronic stressors and our body needs to feel safe, and it can't feel safe if it's not physically nourished, if it doesn't feel safe, you know, mentally. Are we also unique in that aspect? And what I mean by that is, are some people's bodies, they just don't get as stressed by lack of nutrition, whereas some people do? And then on the flip side, with like the mindset and the boundaries, like some people, their bodies just don't get as stressed by stuff like that, and other people's do. Like how unique is it by interpreting the stressors?
Yeah, it's not necessarily, you know, if you're an extrovert, right? Like going to 7 parties.
Yes, that's a question. Yes.
That's great. Like that might be, you know, your jam. You're like, I feel so happy, I got to go to 7 different parties. If you're an introvert and, you know, you hear like, oh, I should be spending time in community, and that's completely draining for you, then of course, there's differences in personality. And some people get super nervous doing public speaking, for example, right? For me, that doesn't stress me out. I know I'm going to mess up things. I know I'm going to forget things. I might make funny faces. It just doesn't really bother me. Like, I can publicly speak all day, and that really doesn't bother me, right? But if I had to clean my house for like every single day, like that would be overwhelming for me, right?
Having your son, what was some of the big takeaways you learned for how to tackle that when it comes to all of the newfound stressors that come along with that? That's a huge question, I know. And people get the book because you put a lot of stuff in the book, but maybe just like a few things, because you just mentioned like not liking cleaning, for example.
Yes. Laundry, all the piles of laundry. It's like never ending when you have like, you have one little person and they have so much laundry. It's like, how do you do it all, right? And this little person comes with so many things. It's like, you've got the crib and the bassinet and all the things. So for me personally, like all the clutter was overwhelming from like all of the baby things everywhere. And so one of the things that helped me a lot was just becoming more of a minimalist with things to create a little bit more space for my son and his things, if that makes sense. Cause it's like my life was already pretty full before I had him. And then I had him and it was like, there's baby stuff everywhere on top of all of my stuff. So just kind of reevaluating what I really needed in my life. And it turned out I didn't need like 50 pairs of shoes, right? Like that don't fit anymore. And like dresses that I wore in college and whatnot. So really just creating that space and becoming more of a minimalist. We have all of our clothes in the same closet now so that we don't have to like go to 27 different places to put away laundry.
Hi friends. I have very exciting news. So I know you guys already know and love Element and understand the importance of electrolytes for hydration, energy, focus, supporting your fasting, your workouts, all the things. Guess what? Element has a product that goes beyond electrolytes. What is it? Well, so I am very pro the benefits of caffeine. I love the cognitive benefits, the longevity benefits. And that said, I am a slow caffeine metabolizer, so I don't actually take in lots of caffeine. I've also learned that the form, dose, and balance of caffeine makes a huge difference in how you actually feel. That's why I am so excited that Element has launched a brand new lemonade iced tea. It's refreshing, delicious, lightly caffeinated, perfect for summer, and what I really love is the science behind it. So instead of relying on massive amounts of isolated synthetic caffeine like so many energy drinks out there do, Element Lemonade Iced Tea uses a full black tea extract, so alongside the caffeine, you naturally get compounds like L-theanine and polyphenols. The L-theanine actually helps smooth out the stimulant effect for a calmer, steadier energy experience with less spikes and crashes, while the polyphenols provide antioxidant support as well. And you guys know I am all about the antioxidants. And the incredible team at Element, including my personal hero, Rob Wolf, conducted a meticulous amount of research to find the perfect amount of caffeine, which is the sweet spot for sustained focus and energy without feeling overstimulated or wrecking your sleep later. That is exactly 50 milligrams of caffeine. On top of that, they knew that caffeine can increase your need for critical minerals like sodium, potassium, and magnesium, so that's why Element Lemonade Iced Tea pairs the perfect amount of caffeine with a meaningful dose of electrolytes to support optimal hydration and performance. And of course, Element Lemonade Iced Tea is completely free of sugar, artificial colors, and all the other stuff that you do not want that are so commonly found in caffeinated drinks today. It's built on the same science-backed electrolyte formula that Element is known for, with sodium, potassium, and magnesium in ratios designed to support hydration and energy production. The result? You get your perfect pack of portable, easy-to-make lemonade iced tea that provides steady, clean energy that tastes delicious and actually feels good. As you guys know, Element is trusted by neuroscientists, functional medicine practitioners, professional athletes, including the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, and they're even used by Navy SEALs and the Marines. So are you ready to up your drink level with the ultimate lemonade iced tea? You can get it. And when you get a free 8-count sample pack of Element's most popular drink mix flavors with any purchase at drinklmnt.com/Melanie Avalon. That's right, a free 8-count sample pack of Element's most popular drink mix flavors with any purchase at drinklmnt.com/Melanie Avalon. Find your favorite flavor or share it with a friend. And by the way, Element has an amazing no questions asked refund policy, so you can try it completely risk-free. If for any reason you're not satisfied, they will give you your money back. Again, go to drinklmnt.com/MelanieAvalon for a free 8-count sample pack of Element's most popular drink mix flavors with any purchase, including their new lemonade iced tea. That's smart. There's a really, really nice section in the book where you talk about getting more time. Like, people think they don't have time. You mention a lot of things people can try to, you know, to tackle that, especially little things like auto paying bills. Like, it's like the little things that really add up and you don't realize. So I love the practicality there. You've mentioned a lot of supplements throughout the interview. And in the book you have, and in your program, you have 6 core supplements. And I think people get very overwhelmed by the supplement world. How did you decide which to have in your 6 core supplements? How did you come to that decision?
I kind of got to a point where, you know, a lot of people working with functional medicine practitioners, it was like they got put on 25 different supplements, right? And that can be overwhelming and stressful in itself, trying to like remember all of these things you have to take and swallowing the pills, so on and so forth. And you're like, what is working? What's not working? And so I wanted to find supplements that I knew could produce really powerful results. For me in general, if a supplement's going to work, you should see some benefits within 3 to 5 days for something. And for a lot of the supplements that I've chose, that's what they do. They help people feeling better within a few short days, sometimes a few short weeks. And then I also wanted to choose supplements that were multi-purpose. So for example, carnitine is one of the supplements that I chose. And I think it's the primary reason why 92% of people will have less brain fog when they get the program is because of carnitine. Now, carnitine can help with getting rid of ammonia in our bodies. Ammonia can cause brain fog. It's something that's produced when we don't digest our foods properly, when we have certain stress-related infections like H. pylori. So carnitine clears out ammonia. It also helps to support a healthy muscle function. So a lot of times people, when they go through this adrenal dysfunction, their body gets stuck in a breaking itself down mode, and they might have some muscle deterioration and muscle wasting. Carnitine builds back muscle. Carnitine has been studied for resolving fatigue. So it is very effective for that. It helps with carrying fatty acids into the mitochondria so that you can produce more ATP and energy. It also helps you to fast better. So if you're somebody that cannot fast, carnitine deficiency could be at the root. Other benefits, it can help, you know, because it strengthens the muscles in your small intestine, it can actually help with having healthier bowel movements. And so every supplement that I've chosen, I'm like, this has so many different benefits. Like, I could choose this to do this, or I could choose this supplement and it does 5 to 7 different things in your body, right?
I definitely need to look more into this carnitine fasting connection. To supplement it, is it taken with meals or on an empty stomach?
Some people might find that they can take it with food. Most supplements I recommend taking with food in case, you know, some people might get an upset stomach if they take it on an empty stomach.
Okay, gotcha. And because you have your supplement line, Rootcology, do you have a carnitine? You do, right?
I do. And the one that I like to use has acetyl L-carnitine, and that's blended with L-carnitine. Acetyl L-carnitine is helpful for our brain, and then the L-carnitine is helpful kind of for our body. And then, I mean, they both work for both areas, but I wanted to combine both of them. So acetyl L-carnitine help with like memory, and it's considered a nootropic. And I utilize a blend of those. I have found to work really, really well in the individuals that have utilized it. There's other companies on the market that make it though too. So,
well, that is awesome. And for listeners, so you can actually get 10% off Isabella's Rootcology line with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. So thank you so much for that, because I know that especially after this interview and reading the book, they're probably going to want to stock up on all the things. And so for all the 6 supplements that you have, you have versions of all of them, correct? In your line?
Yes, the Recology line has all of them. And then I have some alternatives in the back of the book as well. So different kind of brands that you could utilize too.
Okay, so that's the carnitine. I would love to hear more about the myo-inositol. Do you know Cynthia Thurlow by chance?
Yes.
Okay. She was my co-host of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast, actually up until this week that we're recording, but she actually recently released a myo-inositol as well. So I've been hearing all about it. So it was exciting to read your book and learn even more about it. Like briefly, what does it do? Why is it so great?
So myo-inositol used to be considered a B vitamin. Generally, vitamins are things we can't produce on our own, but because our body does produce it naturally, it was declassified, but it is something that seems to be low in people with conditions like PCOS, with blood sugar issues, with diabetes, with obsessive compulsive disorder, as well as in people with thyroid issues. So I started really working with it a few years ago after a study came out that in women with subclinical hypothyroidism, taking myo-inositol could normalize their thyroid function in some cases completely. And when it's combined with selenium, that their thyroid condition like Hashimoto's with antibodies and an elevated TSH, which indicates low thyroid function, just taking those two nutrients together can get some people into remission. So their antibodies can go in the normal range and their thyroid function can normalize. I'm like, wow, I wish I knew this about this when I was first diagnosed. This research wasn't out yet, but this is something that I've been utilizing for people. And it does help with supporting thyroid function to the point where I'll say, if you're on thyroid meds and if you're starting myo-inositol, be sure that you monitor that thyroid function with your doctor, because in some cases, some people may need to lower their dosage of thyroid meds and even come off of their medications once they address that myo-inositol issue. And then it's so helpful for blood sugar issues. I oftentimes will recommend it in the bedtime so that people can sleep better throughout the night. It may be helpful for balancing reactive hypoglycemia. Interestingly, it's also used in obsessive compulsive disorder. I have about 700 milligrams that I'll recommend for, you know, the adrenal transformation protocol, but some people may wish to use dosages that are a bit higher. And so I have it in powder form for conditions like OCD or PCOS. But it is something, you know, I always say, like, you may wish to use it with caution with hypoglycemia, just see how you do with it first. But it is incredible. It's been studied for diabetes, for PCOS. And in my experience, people feel more calm with it. They sleep better. And their, you know, their blood sugar issues improve significantly.
Well, I've definitely been hearing, yeah, like I said, a lot about it from Cynthia. I wonder, in that study, did they compare just myo-inositol and just selenium, or did they just compare the combination?
There are a few different studies, and I can share a link to my blog about the various studies that have been done. There are studies done on just selenium by itself and studies done on just myo-inositol by itself for thyroid function. And they both have benefits, but when they're used synergistically in a dose of 600 of the myo-inositol and 600 milligrams of myo-inositol and 83 micrograms of selenium, there seems to be this synergistic effect where you will get more benefits than utilizing either one alone.
Wow. Do you have a product that is that combination, or do you have them a la carte?
I do have a selenium and myo-inositol, and it's called, drumroll, selenium and myo-inositol.
Yes. Awesome. So for listeners, that's awesome. Okay. So remember, coupon code Melanie Avalon to get 10% off that for Rootcology. I love also that you talk about Saccharomyces boulardii, which is a beneficial yeast. So have you found with that, because the probiotic world is very overwhelming, you found that patients in particular react well to that one in comparison to like bacterial probiotic strains?
So this one is probiotic yeast. And one of the magical things that it does is it helps to raise our secretory IgA levels, which are depleted when we're under a lot of stress. So secretory IgA helps, it's an immunoglobulin secreted in our gut that helps to protect our gut barrier from invading pathogens. It helps us be more tolerant of various foods. Typically, if a person has low secretory IgA, they might be the person that might go out with a group of people for sushi, and you know, they're the only one that gets sick after. And so raising secretory IgA levels can actually help us with preventing like food-related illness, preventing food sensitivities. Also, it can help us with clearing out certain infections. So some of the, you know, kind of like, where does adrenal dysfunction come from? A lot of it can be coming from an inflammatory process in the body, such as a gut infection. The more common one I've seen in people with Hashimoto's is Blastocystis hominis. It's a protozoan parasite. There's also H. pylori, which is a stress-related infection that can be tied to thyroid issues, acid reflux, even stomach cancer. And Saccharomyces boulardii just helps our body become more resilient. So if you're taking other kind of herbs or medications to clear out infections, it can help them work better. And for some infections, just using that by itself can help clear things out. It can also help rebalance the gut flora. If you have too much candida in your system, if you have too much mold in your system, it can be helpful for, you know, clearing out some of the ammonia that can cause brain fog. And it's one of those great probiotics that can also be used with people who have SIBO, because a lot of probiotics, unfortunately, you know, if you have SIBO or if you have histamine issues, you may not be able to tolerate them. But Boulardii is one of the ones that most people do well with, unless they're immune compromised.
Was it difficult for you to source that? Like, was there a lot of options when it came to choosing your source for it?
I had used ones that were like needed to be kept in the fridge before. And I used to recommend those to my clients. But it's, you know, for me, I'm always like, how do you make it easy for people, like compliance and adherence? And so when you keep a probiotic in the fridge, sometimes it's like you forget to take it, right? And so I wanted one. And it's also something that I love utilizing for travel. So you could just put it in your travel bag. And, you know, you're going on an exotic beach vacation in a foreign country, you probably need to support your secretory IgA. It has also been studied for like preventing foodborne illness. So I wanted one that was heat stable. So that's the one that I have by Rootcology. So you do not need to keep it in the fridge, right? And you can put it in your travel bag and you could take it on vacation with you and you can keep it, put it in your pill organizer so that you remember to take it versus like, you know, like, oh, it's in the fridge and I forgot to take it again.
Well, for listeners, we'll put links to all of this in the show notes. And yes, again, coupon code Melanie Avalon for 10% off. So one very last quick thing, because I want to be really respectful of your time on the movement side of things, because you mentioned movement. You mentioned the book, this concept in like animals, when they experience a stressful situation, they like shake after to shake off those stress hormones, which I find fascinating. So this concept of movement, is it good for dealing with stress or can it be too much? And I know we're running out of time and there's like the whole, there's a lot here with like anabolic versus catabolic exercise, but in general, how do you suggest that people approach movement and they can get all the details in your book?
Movement can be incredibly healing. Generally speaking, if you are somebody that is in that catabolic process, your body's breaking itself down, doing things like aerobic exercise or high intensity exercise might be too much for you at this time. So you may need to really get more into a balanced state where you're doing exercise that's more relaxing. So like yoga or Tai Chi, perhaps doing some walking or hiking in nature and doing some muscle, like weightlifting exercises that can help you build more muscle. So you become more in that anabolic state. The kind of rule of thumb that I give to people is if you're feeling worse after you do your exercise, you know, everybody's like, do exercise, it'll make you give you more energy. And you're like, I did exercise and I had to like sleep for 3 days straight. Probably not the dose of medicine right for you at this time. And so you may wish to either reduce the amount of time you're doing that exercise, the intensity, or even the type of exercise. So a lot of the women that I've worked with like the chronic fatigue and adrenal dysfunction and hypothyroidism, we're, you know, they're like, I'm trying to lose weight. And so I'm going on these long, you know, power walks or running to try to lose weight. And then I'll say, actually, you know, based on your adrenal symptoms, I would recommend that you pull back from that for 30 days and see what happens. And they're like, oh my gosh, no, I don't want to gain weight. And then it ends up happening that you can actually get into a healthier metabolic state, because sometimes, you know, it's like if you're sleep deprived, if you're feeling stress in your life, you know, you have too much stress and you tip that scale, exercise can be too much for our system and it could send more of a danger signal. So it's, for me, it's all about like, what's the balance? And so if you're not sleeping at night and you're not eating well enough, you're not eating for blood sugar balance, you're eating a lot of inflammatory foods, and then certain types of exercise can be just too much and too inflammatory. And then your body gets this message. It's like, oh no, we're in a famine because we're not eating enough and we must be chased by a bear because we keep running on a treadmill. And so, and we're keeping watch late at night because we're not sleeping. So obviously we must be in a war. Let's shift into this adrenal dysfunction conservation state. And so it, you know, again, it depends on where you are in that state. So generally speaking, socializing is really great for us. Being able to fast is going to be really great for us. And doing exercise is going to be great for us. But it's like, you've got to figure out your medicine. And is this the right time for it? And what's the dose, right?
Seems to be the theme of everything. And actually, speaking of, just really quick, just speaking of balance and uniqueness, you have a very extensive overview of adaptogens in the book. And I know people have a lot of questions about that. So friends, get the book, get Adrenal Transformation Protocol to learn all about those. But are adaptogens something where it's also very unique to the individual? Like, do they have to find the adaptogen that works for them? Or do you find that some adaptogens tend to work for everybody?
Generally speaking, if you're somebody that's sensitive to supplements, and I've worked with so many people that I have enough people that are like, I'm just sensitive to everything, or they might have certain life situations, like maybe they're nursing moms, or they might have estrogen dominance or other kinds of things going on. It's like, maybe you just start with one adaptogen and see how you do with it before you add anything else. And there's ones that are a little bit more gentle, like holy basil, and that can be used for tea. Rhodiola and reishi is generally pretty gentle as well. You know, if you're somebody with high blood pressure, I wouldn't recommend that you utilize licorice. If you are somebody that needs more support in the libido department, maybe doing some maca and chitavri, those might be helpful things for you. And then, you know, for the average person, if you are, you know, looking for an adaptogenic blend, you can actually utilize a few of them together and they can work in synergy with one another, and then you don't have to take a whole bunch of them. I personally, you know, am able to take, I'm not a person that's very sensitive to supplements. So I do really well with like a blend of various adaptogens, where I'll have some ashwagandha there and some ginseng, and then I'll do a little bit of holy basil in addition. And I do well with that. But again, it depends on your unique makeup, right? So not everybody can do a whole bunch of adaptogens at once.
Well, thank you so much, Isabella. I've been looking forward to this for so long. And like I said, I've been following your work for so many years. And I just think what you're doing is so incredible, so life-changing for so many people. The last question that I ask every single guest on this show, and it's appropriate for our conversation, but it's just because I realize more and more each day how important mindset really is. So what is something that you're grateful for?
I'm grateful for my family and for having the opportunity to connect with so many brilliant people like yourself. And I'm grateful for being able to take my journey and some of my pains that I have gone through and to have created something to help others heal.
Thank you so much. I am so grateful for you. And I really appreciate the science and the nuance and the intelligence that you bring. And then also the, you know, you've worked with so many people. So clearly there's, you know, a reason that this is all working. And then you just have a really, it's so wonderful to meet you because you just have such a beautiful, vibrant spirit. Hopefully we can meet in real life. We were talking before the call about how you live in Austin along with everybody else. So I got to come visit. But this has been so amazing. How can people best get your work, follow your work, and get your book?
Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a delight to meet another kindred spirit. And hopefully we'll get to hang out in Austin soon. For anybody that's looking to help themselves heal, my website is thyroidpharmacist.com. And I have a new book called Adrenal Transformation Protocol. It's a 4-week plan to release stress symptoms and go from surviving to thriving. I also have 3 books about reversing Hashimoto's. including a dietary book that has recipes. So if you have thyroid issues or Hashimoto's, please come. I, you know, would love to help you on your healing journey.
Awesome. Well, we will put links to all of that in the show notes. Thank you so, so much, and enjoy the rest of your day. And hopefully we can talk again in the future.
Likewise, looking forward to it.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. For more information, you can check out my book, What When Wine, Lose Weight and Feel Great with Paleo Style Meals, Intermittent Fasting, and Wine, as well as my blog, melanieavalon.com. Feel free to contact me at podcast@melanieavalon.com. And always remember, you got this.